In today's episode, we speak with Ryan Kerr and Nihad Islam, both research engineers for the NORA Research Lab in Plainview, New York. Ryan and Nihad share about their roles with NORA in advancing the goal of the industry's use of lower carbon liquid fuels.
In the Loop is brought to you by NORA. NORA was authorized by Congress in 2000 to provide funding that enables the liquid fuel heating industry to provide more efficient, more reliable, and lower carbon home heating and hot water to the American consumer. This podcast takes a deeper look at research initiatives, equipment considerations, renewable fuels, carbon reduction, and technical education propelling us towards a low carbon future. For more information, visit noraweb.org.
Ryan, starting with you, what brought you to NORA and what is your background that helped prepare you for the role of a research engineer?
So I started out with my bachelor's degree from Stony Brook University here on Long Island. I started out working actually with a professor who his whole lab is focused on renewable energy. Eventually, he said, I have a friend who also works at Stony Brook, who also is a professor, Dr. Tom Butcher. He's looking for an intern over the summer, and that's how it all started from there.
And what have you learned? How is the lab helping our industry, and what kind of testing are you doing that is making a difference?
So I kind of view my work in two different, you know, avenues. One is the current support for the industry, and the other is the future support for the industry. In the current realm, what we do is, you know, if people have a problem in the field or people are curious about what their fuel currently looks like, you may encounter a site that goes down at night. They can send me a sample of fuel, and I'll run it through our analysis, and I'll see, is it a fuel issue? Is there another technical issue going on? So it's something we can provide a service to the industry here and now. Towards the future, though, what we can do is apply the same kind of analysis to the future fuels our industry could use. Predominantly right now, we're using biodiesel as the main renewable fuel, but there are other fuels like renewable diesel, like a few other ones you can talk about. People in our industry, we don't know 10 years from now exactly what fuel we're going to be using, but we really want to be able to remove any technical barrier to any fuel the industry might use in the future.
So what kind of tests do you actually do?
We have a few different, I guess I'd call qualities of equipment. Some of them are basic fuel quality, you know, how is the fuel doing? There are standards evolved around them. One of them is called a Ransomat test. This is probably the one that gets the most use in our laboratory. And basically what this does is it heats up a fuel to about 220 degrees Fahrenheit and it flows air through it. When you do this, the fuel breaks down very rapidly. It lets you see how a fuel is going to, you know, how it's going to decompose over a long period of time in a rapid, you know, time period. So it gives you a good time frame of how fuel is going to do in the future. Yeah, and one of the other tests we have is an acid number test. This just follows the same principle. Fuels break down, they form acids, and we're just checking to be sure how much acid is currently in the fuel just to know the fuel's quality.
So what about the analysis side? From a chemistry perspective?
Yeah, one of the really big principles we had is how can we go beyond the standards? You know, the standards provide a great background into what's going on, but how can we expand beyond that? So one of these equipment we have, you know, it's one of my favorite ones to use. It's called an FTIR. It actually shines a light onto the sample. And based on how that light reflects, it can tell you the chemical bond makeup of a sample. Every kind of material that exists will show up a little differently with how this light reacts. If we take an unknown sample and we put it through this, it can actually build a spectra and say, hey, this is actually glycerin. This is actually biodiesel. You can backload it and it gives a really good analysis of what's going on in a fuel.
So what are some of the most common issues that you find in samples, like water or?
Yeah, I would say water is definitely a big concern. And when you find water, you do usually find bacteria. That can lead to tank corrosion. That can lead to an issue in the field. What we try and do is any information I can provide to people to just give them something to know, hey, this site is important and needs to be treated.
What are some of the current testing and even field studies you guys are looking at today?
We have about 20 different field sites right now that are running completely on biodiesel. So we've been collecting those fuels every few months to see how they handle the system, if they're breaking down, things like that. And it also allows us to take the current equipment that exists in the field and see if this fuel is compatible with it. One of the big concerns was we have summer shutdown in this industry. And what that means is during the summer, there isn't going to be a new fuel delivery because that's not really when the fuel is being used. And what we found is fuel quality goes down during this time, but then you get a new delivery and everything recovers and everything looks good so far. So it's been very illuminating to see this happen in a real system. We're currently looking at expanding this with renewable diesel and biodiesel blends.
So renewable fuels really are one of the main areas of focus today.
Almost no sample that comes into my lab has no renewable fuels in it. Truthfully, even the ones we receive throughout the industry, there's always at least a small amount of biodiesel or B5 in the sample. It's uncommon to find anything that's just pure petroleum.
So talk a little bit about another little acronym, EL. You are working on a test on that future fuel?
Ethyl levulinate, which EL is definitely better than that. This is a renewable fuel made from things like wood waste or waste cardboard, waste newspaper. Basically, it can be made from any cellulosic material. And it has an incredible greenhouse gas emission score. It's 110% renewable. It also has an incredible cold temperature properties. It doesn't start gelling until about negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Right now, we're looking at some issues in the last few months. Is there a water problem with it? Is there a corrosion problem? So testing on it is still ongoing, and it's still at least probably a decade out from being on the market. We want to be ready for these other fuels to appear.
So looking at renewable fuels, how do marketers ensure they're getting the fuels that are appropriate for home heating?
Biodiesel, renewable diesel should all meet an ASTM standard. And also, I think just talking to the people in the industry, reaching out to people like Nora, we can provide a lot of help. Providing us with a sample is always easy to test.
Anything, any key takeaways that you would want folks to know about what you're doing and how they can rely on you as a resource?
I would say the key takeaway is reach out. If you find an issue, if you have a concern around using new fuels, we have information available, and reach out to us. We, you know, these unique cases, these problems that may occur, we want to help them solve it.
That's fantastic. Nihad, you've been with the Nora Lab since 2017. Tell us a little bit about how your research in the lab is helping those in the field.
There's two test stands that are connected via data acquisition system. So there are two boilers, each with a burner. They're commonly found in the field, and I can control them, turn them on and off at will, using a program that connects me and the data acquisition system to these appliances. And then I can measure things such as temperatures, voltages, and see what the pressure in the pump is, or if we have a stable flame, all kinds of operating conditions I can monitor and control.
So how did you get involved in this? What's your background? What drew you to working in a combustion lab?
I went to school in Stony Brook, Long Island, so Stony Brook University. My background is in mechanical engineering, and I became an intern summer of 2017. And then I stayed on after I finished grad school, and here we are.
You know, you've obviously got a chance to look at a lot of different features and even fuels. What kind of fuels are you looking at today on the combustion side?
So today, right on the forefront is the question of decarbonization. We are testing renewable liquid fuels, which include biodiesel and renewable diesel. These are fuels that are in the forefront because we want to decarbonize as soon as possible. These fuels provide us with the pathway to doing that.
Tell us a few of the ways that you're seeing the research that you're doing making an impact. How are you helping the industry in the research that you do?
I want to highlight first and foremost that helping the industry, that's a big role over the years. I've learned that to our lab director, Dr. Tom Butcher, that is why we're here. I just spoke about the renewable liquid fuels that I work on very closely with. Part of that were research projects such as running legacy pumps that exist in the field already with these renewable fuels blended with number two fuel oil at up to 100% biodiesel and renewable diesel and seeing if they're able to run as they should. Other work that we've done is a lot of combustion testing. What's in the flue gas? What are we seeing? Is it acting different from existing fuels, right? So we put in one of the renewable fuels. Are we changing the operating parameters? And we've established that essentially that not much changes as you go to these renewable fuels. In the past, I have worked on various fuel efficiency, boiler efficiency projects. One of them was actually published as in ASHRAE. It was a study on summertime usage of tankless coil boilers.
Let me interrupt you there. ASHRAE is the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers.
Yes. And that was basically on current efficiencies of tankless coil boilers over the summer and how those efficiency numbers can be improved, you know, using different control measures and such.
So Nihad, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, tell me a little bit of the research you're doing in the area of head coking.
Now, head coking is basically, for lack of a better word, schmutz getting on retention heads. Retention heads are what help burners maintain a proper flame. As that happens over time, that can change combustion characteristics and you know, service call may be required for such. So A, identify what causes or increases head coking and then B, eliminate it or reduce it to the point where it is not a concern. And we've done testing for the last couple of years on this, and we're nearing a solution on this.
Do you all do testing and research beyond just the lab? Are you
doing field
work, perhaps?
Some of the things we do is implement the results we get in the field. So we have field testing on equipment that runs on 100% biodiesel. We also work with various, state organizations. One of the examples is SEMA, Connecticut Energy Markets Association. We do extensions of our testing in various other locations.
So what's some of the most interesting stuff you've seen in your field research? What's unique? What surprised you?
So when I first joined NORA, it was the outlook on renewable fuels such as biodiesel and renewable diesel. They were still very new to people, and the understanding of how they would interact with existing equipment and existing systems was not very well known. You know, and now the outlook that people have on biodiesel, on these renewable fuels has changed drastically. Hmm. And that is what has come, is the outcome of the field work that we have done. So in a way, it's not very surprising, but that's what surprised me the most, that it changed the outlook of people quite a bit.
To acceptance, to feeling more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. People are way more comfortable with it because these field tests show that not much is happening.
So the compatibility issues are not a concern, and people feel comfortable moving to biodiesel or renewable diesel and using those with existing equipment, removing those technical barriers to acceptance, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
And what's your overall impression of the acceptance? Are you seeing folks starting to gravitate?
Oh, yes. Yes. It's a huge shift, much bigger than I had expected. And much faster than I had expected. People are now, the questions have gone from, well, if I add 5% biodiesel to my system, you know, what changes am I going to see? To like, oh, well, this, you know, I saw this B100 demonstration. I heard about, you know, these fuel sites that have be 50% biodiesel to 100% biodiesel. And they're very enthusiastic about it. You know, marketers ask how they could make the switch to higher blends of biodiesel as well. So it's, the reception to it has changed drastically for the better.
And based on good science, which is what the research is that you're doing.
That's my purpose.
What's the key takeaway that you'd like them to know about what you do?
I think the key takeaway is to understand that, you know, these fuels that I'm testing provide us with a very reliable pathway towards decarbonization of the industry.
You've been listening to In the Loop with NORA. For education opportunities, new research initiatives, and industry-specific news from NORA, visit noraweb.org.